you've got to step out and you've got to step towards your dream. The moment that you put all the chips on the table, as uncertain as that feels, wow, sit back and watch the magic happen.
Welcome to Self-Taught. My name is Nathan Knox, and today we get to hear from Steve Gallagher. Steve is many things. He is an EQ coach. He was for a long time the head of student affairs at the university I attended. He led teams of students like the orientation team. He led retreats for students. He's the founder of Ideate, which is a retreat-based program for creators, innovators, entrepreneurs, thinkers in general, who can come and not only find a community in one space in North Carolina, but also be coached under Steve, who is an amazing mentor, an amazing thinker. Today we focus on the question of self-worth in isolation. While it's especially relevant now in this moment of COVID quarantine, I think this conversation is one of the most relevant to just living a happy and healthy and productive life. We talk about chasing dreams and how the more you step towards your dream, the more it steps towards you. And Steve has just a phenomenal story that exemplifies what it means to trust in your dreams and to embrace the uncertainty of life and find a calling through it. Remember that if you want to read the written response to this conversation, you can find that at medium.com/@self-taught. And I hope you get as much out of this conversation as I know I did. I love the backdrop. Where are you?
On the back porch of the current house. And then we'll be moving on the 29th.
Wow.
So heading over to, yeah, we close on the 28th. Movers will be here on the 29th. Get everything moved on the 29th and ready to roll.
That's crazy, man. Can you believe it?
Nutso. It hasn't set in yet.
Yeah, I bet. Do you feel ready for it? Does it feel like it's now that it's like right around the corner, does it feel like, holy crap, am I ready for this?
That thought will pop up usually in the mornings when I first wake up.
Yeah.
And yeah. I'm like, oh snap, what did we just do?
Yeah.
But there's been so many good things along the way that's happened. That it's just been these, you know, breadcrumbs that you follow to the next breadcrumb, to the next breadcrumb. And it goes back to that that thought that we had about how do you get across the river, right?
Right.
And so it's not until you're in the middle of the river and you're looking back and then you're looking that way and then you're like, oh, snap. Like, now, and we can't stand here, right?
Yeah.
So it's just as far going forward as it is to turn around and go backwards. And it's like, all right, let's just go forward.
Yeah. Well, I think your story would be really good to share in this conversation, but I want to build up to it first.
Yeah.
And so Yeah.
No, go ahead.
Just to jump right into it, I mentioned to you a little bit already, but the reason I wanted to talk with you and share our conversation is because I feel like a lot of people, including myself, are suddenly forced into kind of a vacuum space where we have such ample time to be reflecting that we're asking questions we didn't have time or weren't giving ourselves time to ask before, right? Even if it's just time to think, then you're thinking about, am I really doing what I want to be doing? Am I making the most out of my time? Do I feel like I'm growing the direction I want to grow? But then on top of that, all of the things we typically use to kind of identify who we are in our society, amongst our friends, in ourselves. So things like the career structures, the social structures we're a part of, those are all on hiatus for a minute, for a lot of people at least.
Yeah.
And so all of the things that we build outside of ourselves to determine who we are and create our identity seem to be not there for us to grasp onto. So I wanted to talk with you about the ideas of self-worth and isolation, right? When it's just you alone in a room, how do you know what your worth is. How do you determine what your worth is to yourself, right? And then beyond that, how do you define yourself? How do you identify yourself when you don't have these external things to point to? Something we talked about, it's like at the School of the Arts, you walk up to somebody, say, hey, my name's Nathan Knox and I'm in the film program, right? That's your identity. But when that's not there to point to, when you say, hey, I'm Nathan Knox and I'm alone in my room right now, how do you communicate what you are? So that's kind of the general scope of the conversation I wanted to have with you. And I think the best way to start that is maybe would you mind just giving a brief description of who you are and what you've been up to? Because I feel like that will help make it clear why it is I definitely wanted to come to you for this conversation.
Yeah. Well, thanks for thinking of me in that vein. I'm definitely appreciative and always enjoy our conversations and where we think we're headed in the conversation and where we end up. It's always a pleasant surprise, and sometimes we intentionally get there and sometimes we end up in places. It's like discovering the little dive diner that you wouldn't have found if you hadn't got lost off the interstate, right?
Yeah.
So yes, I just compared myself to a little rustic diner on on a backcountry road. I think that's what I said there. So I have spent the past 20 years working in higher ed in university settings, and my work on college campuses has been advising, mentoring, coaching college students and young professionals. With the most recent 10 years having been at North Carolina School of the Arts. In that capacity, working with young professionals who are going into acting, theater design, filmmaking, dance, music, usually very driven people, right? Like if you attend an arts conservatory, chances are you're probably, I would say maybe hyper-focused on a career versus folks who may, I did an undergrad at a liberal arts university. And so at a liberal arts, you're kind of a little more of a generalist, if you will. No offense to anyone who wanted to be a specialist in did a liberal arts ed, but in these past 10 years, just as you mentioned at the beginning, how many times the conversation starts with, I'm Nathan Knox and I'm a producer and I produce documentaries, right? Not even that I enjoy film, but it's here's what I do. And in conversations that you and I have had, it seems like the tail end of the millennial generation, now Gen Z, which are the students who are in college now, their identities are wrapped up so much in what they do, which kind of brings us to this conversation. What do you do when you can't do? For me, there were some aspects that happened in my personal life about 11 years ago, which just happened to intersect with my arrival at School of the Arts. And so I think maybe that magnified my discovery in conversations of, man, people are really, really place a heavy value in what they produce or what they do or what they I think I would stick with the word do, because it seems like it's so much about doing. I don't know if that helps.
Yeah, absolutely. And then even on top of that, part of the reason I wanted to talk with you in particular is because of you had this period at the School of the Arts that was life-changing for all the people who were orbiting your presence there. And then...
Wow, thanks.
Yeah, well, of course, and you know that as well. And so for people who might not know you, one thing you'd always tell us as we were coming to your office and being like, what do I do? I don't know what I'm doing with my life and all this. You'd say that your why, the reason you're there, is to be our biggest fan, right?
Yeah.
And that it just allows us to say, no matter what I'm doing or how I'm feeling, I'm appreciated, I'm loved, I'm enough, right?
Yeah.
And so how valuable is that, right?
That was the piece, I think. I love your description of how at times our lives will orbit other lives. And there was probably about a 4-year period there when and it was actually probably during your 4 years there, where noticing that when we were putting these teams together, that were missional, they might have been responsible. This team might have been responsible for helping incoming students and their families get acclimated to campus. A lot of times these teams were missional and had a function to do. But what I accidentally discovered in building that team that you were on was every time that we would meet someone and we would say, hey, we just want to set up a time to chat with you. We, you know, get to know you, figure out who you are. People automatically went into this audition mode, right? Mm-hmm. And it was always about, let me tell you how good of a filmmaker I am. Let me tell you about my grades in high school. Let me tell you, it was this, what we're taught to do in an interview. We're taught to sell ourselves. We're taught to blow your own horn. This is the time to really sell. And
it's do oriented, right? Like, here's what I've done.
Yes. It's not about who I'm being, right? And so what we said, and even for me, when I started with that team, I can remember planning this onboarding retreat, okay, where I had 3 days completely scripted out of here's what we would do, here would be the conversations we would have, and something said to me, the night, this would have been probably 2013 or 14. Something said, how much do you believe in the message that you're advocating for? And that was, hey, just show up and be yourself. And I believe that when we do that, that something, the magic will appear, right? But it can't be based on what you do. It can't be based on how good you are, because what happens is we begin to magnify ourselves over the good of the team. And so everyone wants to come in, and it turns into this performance. I want to be the greatest editor on the team, and I want to be the greatest dancer on the, right? And so there's people start jockeying for that. And so on this night before leaving for retreat, I took the program that we had created for 3 days. When I say we, me at that point, we were still developing a student leadership track for it where students could come in and lead it. And I tossed it all in the trash. And I said, do I really believe in this message of let's show up and feeling that my role was just about holding back the noise? Okay. So maybe I was the COVID of 2012, right? It was this disruption. Okay. You can spot quote me on that. Steve Gallick, COVID 2012. And so it really felt like that my job was just to hold back noise, hold back distractions, the outside, and let's get this group of people that we had felt through conversations could really be okay with just being, and could put the good of the team or the good of the of this organism, we could put that ahead of our own selfish desires, needs, and insecurities, right? And so as we did that, what we discovered was people became okay with not doing. And what we said and tried to model for the teams over those next 4 years was, hey, I don't care how good of a filmmaker you are. I don't care if you're the best dancer in this entire conservatory. I don't care if you're the best out of whatever your field you're in. That's totally irrelevant to us. And while we applaud that, while we applaud your hard work, while we applaud your dedication and your commitment to your craft, we really don't give a flip about it this week. We just want you to come and be, right? And when you first mentioned this conversation to me, this thought came into my mind of, Isn't it funny that we're not called human doings? We're called human beings. But yet it's something that that we're learning about ourselves right now, that one of our greatest struggles is just being. Okay. And so what started happening was that mindset, that philosophy took hold in this group. And you and friends in our circle there began to buy into that. They began to espouse it. They believed it. They lived it. And so what happened was that began to spread. And what happened was you started seeing people show up who had never in their life, it seemed like, had never been okay with just being in the room. And that was okay. That you were good enough. Right. And we would even say to them along the way, from the time that they had applied to the time that we had gone through training to the time that your first day of really just being, right? We said, if at any point this starts feeling wonky for you, walk away. We want to give you every opportunity in the world to quit. And what we saw was we saw less people quitting because more people were given freedom to just be. And what happened was, as people became comfortable with just being, they stopped measuring their own self-worth. So they then stopped measuring the worth and judgment that they were placing on other people. Mm. Think about that for a second. Think about that all of a sudden, it was no longer this performance-based model, right? It was just about being. And what we saw was, we saw this, what I would consider almost supernatural synergy that came from it, because we were about the good of the community versus our own needs. And what happened was, every individual in that community, their needs were met with unfathomable support from those next to them.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the piece. And so we know, I think you could attest to it in a 20-year career, seeing that for a 4 or 5 year window, that could happen. If I'm not careful, I'll start describing it. It'll sound like a cult. let's all move to 40 acres in the middle of, of the Midwest and let's do this. But when you have a setting that you get to that you can say, here are our values, and you can say, can we all agree to this? And everyone does agree. And if you don't agree, that's okay. I guess that's the difference in being a cult, right? A cult, you can't leave. You're stuck there. But giving opportunity, that freedom to just be, was probably one of the most magical seasons in my career.
Mm. Yeah, and one of the amazing things about that period, and so a little more context for, I don't know if people are watching this, but a little bit more context there. You build these teams, so something like the orientation team, welcome squad. I'm a part of that. I was a part of that team for 3 years. You take us before school opens up, you take the team on a retreat for us to just be for a while, and I don't think anybody who's been a part of that team has been able to put into words really what that experience is like, really what it's like to be in a space where all you have to do is be. And one of the most amazing things apart that is then when you're just being, and it's not about what you do, it's not about your accomplishments, and it's not about measuring yourself up to other people around you or living up to standards. It's like, I'm just me, and that is perfect. That is exactly what I need to be right now.
Right.
What you do is you unleash yourself, right? You are unleashed to be the things you typically didn't associate with, like, what's even in your lane, right? So instead of being a filmmaker, tonight Trent and I are Italian chefs, and we're going to make, you know, different types of pasta and serve the whole place. Yeah. And I think it was Greer or somebody who's going to arrange the whole space and create amazing napkin layouts and play music. And it's like, we are all now totally free to be whatever we feel like we can be in that moment. It has nothing to do with who we've been or who we will be in the future. It's like, Who do I want to be right now? And if it's a chef, that's what I'm going to be. Or if it's a shoulder to cry on, that's what I'm going to be. And that freedom, that flexibility is where, for me, there has been so much discovery about even just my own capacity, right? Like, there's so much you can discover when you're playing roles you never allowed yourself to play.
Yeah.
The capabilities in yourself you realize, those can be transplanted to anything you do in life, right?
Right, yeah.
So tying it back to this moment, the difference is then we had a guide, right? We had a sagacious leader taking us through this spiritual journey, right? You being there and kind of helping curate this moment and help us whenever not really knowing what we're getting into becomes scary. You were there to be like, no, this is exactly what you're supposed to be doing and feeling. A lot of people right now aren't in that, I assume, right? I don't have much connection with the outside world, so I'm not totally certain, but I'm imagining a lot of people are in a space where all they can do is be, and it's scary or it's confusing. And so that's kind of where I want to open it up. Do you have anywhere to go just off of that?
No, I think one piece that I think that would be true in that moment, that would be true even in what we're experiencing now, is I think my chief role there was to model grace. Okay. And by that, what I mean is anytime you get a group of 30 people together who aren't accustomed to being together for extended periods of time, I mean, you guys were together 24/7 for a period of about 3 weeks, right? And so usually 7 days in, somebody is starting to wear on you. Somebody is starting to get on that last nerve that you have. And so all of a sudden, insecurities, once again, and I think insecurity is a theme here. Our insecurities begin to look around the room and that person hasn't quit talking, right? It feels like that if that person is allowed to be like, because you would look around the room when you would first get in and you're like, so-and-so made the team, right? And so there would immediately be this comparison, right? Going back to comparison, and comparison comes from insecurity of going, man, you know, all the veterans on the team keep telling me is just trust the process. And hey, don't worry about who's in the room. Don't worry about you know, this dynamic or that dynamic. But what I tried to do in those moments was simply model grace. And that was, hey, this team is going to be something different for everyone in the room. And sometimes what we would say is sometimes the team needs this person and sometimes that person needs us, right? But it's having the grace to just tune in and listen, right? And so when this person seemed to be like rambling in the middle of a discussion and people are getting insecure, we're running out of time. Are we going to be able to finish this discussion? Can we get this project done? I would just try to give that person the grace to let the room be what they needed in that moment. Okay. So thinking about today right now, how is it that as you're sitting here and you've just found out news that you're being furloughed on your job, or you know, whatever that maybe that bad news is that's come in, that you're okay with it, and you just begin, or maybe it's a family member, maybe it's a roommate, where we can just say, hey, this person really could use an extra helping of grace today. And by grace, I mean this undeserved, unearned passion, love, room to just be okay. Right. And so what happened was as we begin to model this grace, right? I think the reason that we're unable to do it is because of these unmet expectations that we have for ourselves. I heard someone say a couple of months ago that all frustration begins with unmet expectations. You're frustrated with your significant other. You came in and the sink was full of dirty dishes. And that begins the largest argument in the history of your relationship, right? And all it began with was, I had hoped that they would do the dishes today, right? And so in this moment, going back to, and this is, these are where these rabbit trails and you find the rusty diner. Let me come back onto the highway here. For that person who is sitting today going, I don't know what is about to happen in my life, right? How can they give themselves grace today? And how can they just be okay with this too shall pass? I mean, it's so cliche, but it's so true. And I think for the Gen Z and millennials specifically, this is the first global, national, very much felt time of uncertainty, urgency, crisis that these two generations have experienced. And so saying, I think our role as people who have been here before, whether it was with 9/11, whether it was with the 08 crash, people who have been there before, I think it's our job going back to, hey, Steve, but you got in the room and you got everybody calmed down. I think that's where my generation needs to step up right now and remind mm-hmm. your generation, hey, this too will pass.
Yeah. Yeah, and part of that might be letting us be comfortable in the uncertainty, right? Like you've said, trust the process. It's not about knowing the process. It's not about knowing if we're going to end up at, you know, the end of the interstate or the diner. It's about trusting the process.
Right.
And that's for a lot of us right now. It's like, it's just uncertainty. And that can be very scary, especially when you're young and when you still have, you know, some pretty massive questions you're facing with or purposely not facing in your life,
yeah, yeah.
You know? I mean, even myself, I came into school, I think I've told you about this, but I came into school feeling like I know 100% who I am. I know where I'm going. I know how I'm going to get there. No uncertainty, no doubt whatsoever. And then throughout school, I grew so much that naturally my vision of my vision of my future self changed. My vision of my goals changed. My vision of my how I'm going to contribute to my loved ones and to my community and to my society changed. And it changed whether or not I was paying attention. So then at some point, I've got to stop and ask myself that question again. Wait, who am I? And again, I'll answer that question. It might be like a period of like, what am I doing? Oh my gosh, but I'll find some answers, continue to go and to grow.
But here's what's interesting to me. And I think about how many times of hearing those thoughts. And I don't think this is what you're saying, but I think someone listening to this could see that as, let's see, if I were doing a growth chart on a Skype call, would this be the timeline? Okay.
All right.
I'm going backwards for me. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think what it is there's this, I know what I'm doing. I know where I'm going. I continue to experience growth. Right. And I think there's something, and this is where experiencing your first period of uncertainty comes into the play. You're watching a film, and here's the trajectory of the main character. Okay. If the storyline continues on this trajectory, we're in for a pretty boring movie. And those truths that we know from Joseph Campbell, if you haven't read Joseph Campbell, I would encourage anyone listening to this to read The Hero's Journey. The hero can't continue on this trajectory for their lifespan. And what happens is I think this is that first, wait a minute, this isn't on the path that I'm supposed to be on. The majority of your life may not be on the path that you were supposed to be on, but I've got news for you. You are today where you're supposed to be today. That's it, right? Like if I really believe this thing, then everything that is happening to me today is not a surprise to the universe that was set in motion how many billions of years ago, right? Like this is where we're supposed to be. And when we say, I've got this figured out and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do that, that's great. But I don't know anything in nature that lives like this. I would encourage you to look at your tidal, T-I-D-A-L. What are the waves on the ocean? The tide, when it comes in, it ebbs and flows. It doesn't just ebb, and ebb. If it did, you wouldn't have a coastline, right? And we can get into coastal erosion later, right? But course of nature is supposed to be that it ebbs and flows. Day and night, right? Seasons. And it's so interesting to me that a generation that is so focused on conservation and preserving the environment, and this is how nature was intended, that we forget that we too are a part of nature, and that our life is not designed to do this for 70 years. It's unrealistic. It's unfair to yourself. And it's a lie at best. And so when you have this expectation and COVID hits, you're going to find yourself curled up in a fetal position under your house somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so saying, hey, look at a sine wave, the ebb and flow. That's how nature is intended. Western society says we're supposed to be like this, and anything that's not on the trajectory of 1/1 up, 1/1 up, 1/1 up, then something's wrong with you.
Right.
And I would argue that that's the lie that Western society has had out as propaganda. It's great for selling things. It's great for you signing up for the next whatever to get your next 10,000 followers on Instagram, but it's a lie. Mm. And it's in these moments where all of a sudden the 1/1 up doesn't happen that we get smacked in the face with reality.
Would you say that this moment where whatever trajectory we thought we were on is suddenly completely uncertain and we find ourselves in a position we never would have expected, and it's scary and it just shakes us a little bit. Would you say that's an opportunity of some kind?
Oh my gosh, it's the greatest opportunity. When you're going through life, and these are the things that I'm noticing on the perimeter around me. When you're going through life in such a routine that you don't even realize what season you're in, that you don't even realize that your best friend is celebrating their 30th birthday, not their 22nd birthday, because you've just had your nose to the wheel and you've been grinding. What happens is you become stagnant. You become complacent. You get into the routine and the rut. And I think about a few years ago, I was looking at Alzheimer's and some of the neural pathways that we just create these ruts in our thinking, and you blink and you don't even realize that you drove home, right? There are moments where we need to be shaken, where disruption has to happen. And what has intrigued me, I've only been out of the office for 2 weeks now, in the sense of working remotely. And so I'm a little behind the curve for everyone else who's probably in their fourth or sixth week of this. But the piece that I keep watching for is what will be the innovations that will come out of this disruption. I mean, these are the times, if you look back through the history of mankind, it was these moments of disruption were the greatest growth and innovation. Now, I'm not talking about going and doing, right? I want this to be a personal note that these are the opportunities where we can say, oh, wow, we just came up on the roller coaster and all of this adrenaline is here now. How can I use that to then wake up and have some self-discovery and growth?
Yeah. And then what comes from that? If it is a doing, it's probably a type of doing you never thought you were capable of, right? Or never let yourself really entertain the possibility of. And so I think A good way to exemplify this is you are about to move into a new house, which is a much bigger deal than just moving into a new house. I was wondering if you'd be willing to kind of share your journey from the very beginning, wherever that is for you, to this narrative, and kind of how you've... I think your story is a perfect example of it's not a straight line all the way up to, you know, total self-realization. It is this up and down journey filled with growth and questioning and progress and all of this. So would you mind?
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you for this opportunity to even touch on this. It's fresh to me right now because we're in it and because so many people who are in our lives are watching Keila and I right now, and they're scratching their head going, what the heck is going on with you guys? And where did this come from? And so that started about 4 years ago. 4 years ago, there was this moment that happened in my life. And actually, it started 6 years ago, but the awakening, I think, for me happened about 4 years ago, around 2015. 2014, my biological dad passed away. And I had never had a relationship, close relationship with him. And I went and attended the funeral, paid my respects, fast forward a couple of months, and I get the will. And having not had a relationship with him and knowing that he had a second marriage and siblings that are in that marriage, half siblings, there wasn't any expectation. And so I was a little surprised when I found out that I had been named in the will. And long story short, I was left $1 in the will. And what happened was when that moment happened, I felt like my life had been summarized and defined to have a value of $1. Okay. So what happened was that was a moment that I hit a wall. And for the next couple of years, I went into this spiral, but it was such a slow spiral. It was almost like that frog baking or that animal that you're cooking and it's a slow boil. So they don't even know that they're dying. And so when I began to notice these goofy reactions that I was having to things, weren't matching up with the situation. For example, I couldn't get my iPhone charger untangled from the wall. And so instead of just unplugging it from the wall, you're ready to punch a hole in the wall, right? And so those are moments that I use in coaching, like, hey, the moment you're having severe reactions to a small problem, that might be a sign that we need to talk. But what I realized in that moment was that I had allowed this inheritance of $1 to define my value. And if my life is only worth $1, then my life isn't worth having a dream. My life isn't worth pursuing anything grand. And so I went to hear one of my favorite authors speak at a workshop over in Durham, and it was this all-day thing. And while I was listening to him speak, he was asking questions like, what keeps you awake at night? What dreams do you have? What's out there for you that's bigger than anything you can achieve alone? And I realized that I had stopped dreaming. And I couldn't even remember when I stopped dreaming. Had an idea it was probably around 2014. But what I also knew in that moment was that I had become completely stagnant in anything that had to do anything for my personal life. Now, if it was for you guys, if it was for my team, oh man, I can be your biggest enthusiast, your biggest fan, and we're going to celebrate and push. But when you all would look at me and say, well, what do you want to do? Crickets, right? And so what I started doing was I said, I know that movement represents life and that no movement represents the opposite of that. And so I had to start moving. And so what I started doing was I started making up dreams that I could aspire to and writing them in a journal. And I mean, I'm just making goofy stuff up. I want to own a hardware store. I want to have a campus bookstore. I want to have, and I would get as far as I could dream with it. And then it would just stop. I'm like, all right, it's not that one. Well, finally, this idea came about of having done these retreats with you guys over the years, and seeing the fulfillment that not only that I was getting, but that other people seemed to be experiencing. I started thinking about what if I were able to offer that with a team? What if we were able to offer that for society as a whole? That dream stuck. Okay. And, but when I looked at it, the budget to do this thing, right? And the budget that was my reality were so far apart. But instead of backing down as I had in the past and letting the fear of the unknown shut me down, I allowed that fear to propel me. And I said, you know, with Keela and I, we were talking, and I said, and she's a dreamer. Like, she's always been the dreamer. And so this was me stepping out into unknown territory, and she was enjoying it, eating popcorn and watching. It was my life was her Netflix binge. Just kidding. But so we began movement towards that. We began conversations. And when I listened to the author speak that day in March of 2016, something said to me, but how far are you willing to go for this? Are you willing to give it all up? And the thought came to me, would you quit your job? Okay. And at that time, this was right when we were in the middle of, I mean, there wasn't a day that I dreaded going into work. You know, you reference sitting in the office and us scratching our heads and me crying or you guys crying and then going to the whiteboard and dreaming what this could look like. I said, you know what, I'm in my 40s now. And if I'm ever going to do this, then yeah, I'll bankrupt everything to make this dream happen. And I just went into it with this kind of reckless abandon, not to the point that it compromised my family's security or safety, right? But everything that I had been, that I had felt safe with before, I was willing to lay it out. Well, over the next couple of years, fast forward, all of a sudden I looked at Keela last January and I said, you know what? If I'm going to do this, I think I'm supposed to resign from my job this year. And so, but I didn't have anything else. I mean, like, we're talking, man, I'm really getting ready to jump off the ledge here. And so, what was wild was as I began stepping towards the dream started stepping towards me. And there were these moments where the only way I could describe them, I might use words like providential. I might use words, organic, magical, mystical, miraculous. And we started having things like people show up to our house and say, we know your house isn't on the market, but we'd like to buy your house. Who are you? And is this a scam, right? moments like that were happening. Moments where last year I started getting up every morning at 4:30 in January, not the ideal time if you're going to start a 4:30 morning routine, but going out and walking the dogs and just started talking about my dream out loud to myself while I'm walking the dogs at 4:30 in the morning. Mm. And so what we saw happen was, as we began to step forward towards that dream, people that we had never met before came into our lives. And we had a realtor friend say, I don't know why I'm showing you properties that are double your budget, but we're going to show these properties to you. And so what happened, the piece that you're talking about with the new house, 30-minute answer to get to this lead up, was having someone in our circle who had watched this journey of going all the way back to this $1 defining moment, and I refused to be defined by that. And in this moment of, and listen, there were the ups and downs. There were moments where I'm going, man, I've got to quit my job and just get my head on straight. Like all those chaotic moments, but I'm not going to stop and I'm not going to go backwards. I may pause, but I can't turn away from this anymore. Having someone Keela saw a property, saw an open house. This would have been a month and a half ago. And she said, let's go to this open house and check this out. And we went, and I knew as soon as we walked through the house, I'm like, oh gosh, Keela's going to be in love with this place. And the idea that we had arrived at was, what if we had a place where individuals who, in the middle of a crisis, in the middle of burnout, in the middle of fill in the blank, that they just need to reset, or they just need to hit pause, and they need a place where they can go and they can have what you were talking about earlier. What do you do when you don't have that person in your corner? Here's a place where you could go, and you know that your time spent there is a group of people who are in your corner. And if you don't even know where your corner is, how can we help you figure out where your corner is? Maybe you're in a round room and you don't have a corner. But we're going to help you figure that out. And so, but we wanted to do this, and we wanted to have a place where conversations and gatherings could happen, and getting like-minded people in the room, going back to the Welcome Squad, and watching synergy, the magical synergy happen, and having a place that we would dedicate to that, and we would live there, and we would take care of this, and we would open it up and offer it. And so Keela sees this place, and we go to the open house, and we went out and looked at it a few times. And in the middle of this, a close member in our circle said, so how far off are you on your budget and the dream here? And I said, well, funny you should ask. I've been working on my pitch deck, and I've been working on a business plan. And what I'll probably need to do is take out some type of small business loan. And we're probably within, it's six figures, you know? And so, but almost being afraid to say that, right? But I knew that number. I had calculated it down, and I said, well, we're at about, you know, this many $100,000. And they looked at me and they said, you've got it. And I'm like, are you like, is this like a positive affirmation? You know, is what I'm thinking in my heart. Like, yeah, I'm with you. We're pressing forward. And this was somebody close to us who said, no, we believe in what you're wanting to do here, and consider that you have, we're giving you that amount of cash to purchase this property and make this dream a reality. I can't tell you anything other than you've got to step out. And you've got to step towards your dream. And even in the moments, if you're stepping towards the dream includes crawling, scraping, when you are making movement, and when you are saying, hey, I'm willing to show up, I have become an optimist in these past few years to say that the universe is not conspiring against me. I think there's a mission that each one of us are called to do with our life. And the question is, will you surrender your life to that mission at all costs? Because I think the moment that you put all the chips on the table, as uncertain as that feels, all I can tell you is my experience. And my experience has been, wow, sit back and watch the magic happen. In that moment. And now we are moving into a house that is almost three times the square footage of what we're in now. And it's not so that we can hoard and say, man, we have arrived. We've done this one up, two over, one up, right? But it's about this. Your dream has to be about for the good of humanity. And I think when you show up, I think when you put all the chips on the table, and this is about bettering others, that's where I think the magic happens. And so now, in a matter of 3 weeks, we will be closing on that property, and we will be moving into it. And someone said to me, are you not worried with COVID hitting right now that, like, maybe you should hit pause on this? And I said, are you flipping kidding? What better time to have a place where people can go and get their head on straight, where people can go and know that someone's in there. What better time than COVID-19 to move into your dream?
It is one of the most inspirational stories. And the thing, though, that I want to point out is that it's not luck. I don't see one aspect of that that is actually luck. Like, the bravery it takes to continue on that journey, and every moment when it did feel like everything was falling apart, which you've told me about, that it wasn't all just like, here's everything you need. It was like constantly having to be courageous and brave and push through those hard moments.
Last January, I knew that I was supposed to resign from my job on July 31st. And over those next 7 months, it hit the fan. And it became comical to me because I saw it as, man, you're really making sure that I'm going to take the leap because this thing's turning into a circus, right? And I told Keela one night, this would have been in the spring of last year. I'm like, I just have this confidence that even though I don't have another job, I'm supposed to resign on July 31st. And as the summer approached, it was almost that now you've walked up the high dive and now you've walked out on the board. And I told Keela, I was reminded of a story that's in some of the ancient text, the story of Noah and the Ark. And maybe it's a kid story that maybe you heard growing up, where Noah is this human being who is walking so close with the Creator. And I pictured these conversations of Noah saying, hey, you know, we're tight, right? Like, I'm in this. And the Creator is like, yeah, no worries. And all of a sudden one day the Creator says, Noah, grab a pen and paper. And I know they didn't have pen and papers, but go with me for a second. And so Noah's got his writing utensil, maybe he's chiseling it in the rock. And all of a sudden the Creator says, hey, we're going to need 20,000 timbers of gopher wood. And Noah starts to write and he looks up and he says, Creator, 20,000, what? And Creator says, just write. And he just starts writing. And Noah says, what am I supposed to do with, like, he's got this list and like Home Depot wasn't there. You couldn't go get timber wood, gopher wood at Home Depot. And all of a sudden he starts getting the idea for what this thing's going to be. And Creator says, write this at the top, B-O-A-T. And Noah says, Boat. What's a Boat? Because up until this point, boats didn't exist. But Noah is so sold on this that he's going to write up plans. And not only is he going to write up plans, his property is now covered with these shipments from Home Depot. And he's got all this out there. And I told Keela, I said, Keela, I feel like Noah, the day that the Creator says, here it is. And you're going, but there's no model for this. There's nothing out there. And Creator says, isn't that the beauty of this? Isn't that what this is all about? Is showing up? And so I'm telling this to Keela in this very spot that I'm sitting now. Liv was in bed. Our daughter was in bed. She's 9 at the time. And I come home the next day from work and she's watching the movie Evan Almighty. The kid has never watched Bruce Almighty. Evan. She doesn't know what any of this is about. And as I'm walking in the door, she looks at Keela and says, Mom, this feels like our life right now. And I'm telling you that the breadcrumbs will begin to appear. But are you willing to take the step towards it, right? I tell my boss on July 1st that I'm going to be resigning at the end of the month. They're a little bit taken aback, but they're supportive. The next week, my boss leaves their position. Now I'm just laughing out loud. All right, really? Really, Creator? Like, July 31st, huh? Yeah. So now I can't find someone to resign to. And so I do my homework, find out, all right, I'm supposed to resign to my boss's interim boss, call their secretary, their executive assistant, and that person says, Steve, their first availability is July 30th. Of course it is. Of course they're not available for 3 weeks. July 30th, I meet with them. It's an 8-minute meeting. Steve, we appreciate everything. This person doesn't know me from Adam. Steve, we appreciate everything you've done here. And I walk out and she said, how soon can you have me your letter of resignation? And I said, I can have it to you tomorrow, July 31st. I walk out of the office. Now, these are the scary moments. And I call Keela and I begin to cry. And I said, I don't know what I've just done to us, but we're out there now. The next day, I hand in my resignation. 2 weeks later, I have a new supervisor who's just arrived on campus. And after a week and a half, 2 weeks of us working together, they came to me and said, we know that you've resigned, but I'm going to ask if you'll reconsider. I need you to stay on in a new role as being my right hand. I ended up with a promotion that I never would have gotten had I not resigned. And all the while I'm going, as I'm resigning, hey, how the heck am I supposed to pay for a property that's double the budget when I don't even have proof of income? I'm telling you, the breadcrumbs will appear. And the reason I use breadcrumbs is it's not a neon sign confirming that you're on the right path. And sometimes the breadcrumb isn't on the visible path. But will you pay attention and will you continue walking? And I think if you do, at least for me, and I think you've got to listen to your own guide, right? But I think when you do that, I think that's where the magic happens. The problem is we want the magic without the fear. Now, how in the heck does all of this tie into COVID-19? There's a lot of magic out there waiting for us right now, but we've got to push through the fear. Fear is okay. Fear is a survival instinct. There were mornings that I woke up and I said, fear, thank you for being in my life. You play a critical role. If it weren't for fear in my life, when that car comes speeding down the road and I'm walking the dogs at 4 o'clock in the morning, I get plastered. Fear helps me survive day to day. So instead of avoiding the fear, instead of seeing the fear as something negative, hey, fear, thank you for being in my life, but you are not in the driver's seat. You get to ride shotgun, but keep your hands off the steering wheel.
And I think a point that's really, really important to repeat is that this incredible journey you've been on, which is like, I know getting this house and moving in is not going to be the end of the journey. Obviously, it still feels like it's the very beginning, but it's still a huge, huge, huge moment in this journey. Began in the moment you felt like your life was worth $1. Right?
Yes.
That's like where this began.
That's perfect. Yes.
And so for anybody in this moment when they can't place a value on their life, right? When all the things that told them they had value, you know, the place they worked, whatever position they had, whatever goals they were working towards, whatever future they had envisioned, when that doesn't feel certain and the value disappears with it, that's the beginning of something. That can be the beginning of their journey.
Absolutely. And what I haven't spoken to, I referenced Keela in this, but what's so important is that you find people who are not the gloom and doom people. Okay. Cause you're going to have, there's enough of society out there to tell us, there's enough inner dialogue to tell us why we can't do it. But to have someone sitting beside you who is a source of inspiration, who can be that rock. That's Keela. We're going into our 20th year of marriage. And there's times that I would look at her and say, why in the heck did you pick me, right? Out of that self-worth, right? But having having those people who complement, having those people in your life that when you've gotten up on the diving board, that they're cheering you on, and they're not calling you crazy. They're not saying, what in the world? You're going to have those people. Those are your family members. You know, your parents are going to look at you and say, what are you? And you listen and you tune into that and you appreciate that and you respect that, but you continue moving forward. But Keela standing at the diving board going, you got this, you've got, you know, and sometimes it was like, I don't need you pushing me right now. Get your hand off my back, you know, but she was there. And I knew that no matter what, that she was in this, that she had bought the lifetime subscription she was in. And so knowing that person is in my life means everything, because there's those moments when you wake up and you're going, what did I just do? Like when I called her and she just laughs and she goes, oh, this is where the fun starts. This is where. And so, oh, she reminds you to breathe, right? You've got to have, and maybe it's your life partner, maybe it's your business partner, maybe it's a best friend, maybe it's a family member, but it's so critical that you're in tune with your surroundings enough that all of a sudden you go, I don't know what it is about this guy Nathan Knox, but I feel like he's supposed to be on the team, right? Nathan Knox saying, I don't know what it is about Steve Gallagher and this goofy team, but I just feel like I'm supposed to sign up for it. And then here we are almost 10 years later and look where this relationship is. And so I would encourage anyone listening or watching to just tune in and watch for those people who want to be your supporters, who want to be your enthusiast, who are the people who will encourage you and that you'll listen to even when you won't listen to yourself. I think that's critical. And I think that's why I would say to people today, what are those sources? Turn the news off, okay? We know that COVID is here for a bit. And okay, so I got to quit watching the news this morning, but what are those sources of encouragement, of positivity, of support that I can find and lean into?
Well, Steve, you know you've been that for many, many, many people. You were certainly that for me in some of my, you know, harder moments, and I know that's true of a lot of the people I care about. So on behalf of all of that whole pantheon of people, we seriously thank you so much for everything you do. And I wanted to mention, Lexi told me that I have to mention this to you. She said that we will come and be like the farmhands for free. For if we can live there, and she'll teach yoga in the mornings, I'll do your marketing, and so the more Absolutely. You talk, don't talk about a commune too loudly, else Lexi will suddenly be packing up the car.
Listen, we've got some acreage, and Keel and I are thinking about, all right, how would tiny houses on this work, and how would spaces work here, and again, this is only the beginning. I can't wait where those possibilities line up. And we see where this thing goes. And for you guys as well, like this is, I know it's a goofy time when you're producing and you're out and it's so much about being out and traveling and needing to do your work. And so Keel and I are excited for you guys, during this season as well. And want to encourage you, to lean in as much as you can. And when you start feeling a little, wonky from it, that's okay. That's a completely normal human reaction that anybody would experience right now. My encouragement would be the moment that you notice that you're 3 days into that feeling, don't let it get to 3 days, but reach out to folks and have conversations where you can be an inspiration, not only for yourself, but to one another.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's an especially important point right now is people are so much more receptive than I think we imagine, right? Like even somebody you haven't spoken to in a while, you give them a call and say, hey, I just need to talk to somebody. People, I mean, that forges bonds unlike anything. And right now, more than ever, I feel like we need to be willing to reach out to people and forge those bonds.
Absolutely.
And we'd be so surprised how much that changes our lives. One last thing, though, because I think you're totally right that after the COVID moment, people are going to need their spaces to kind of get their heads on straight again and feel like they have a community and you know, belonging. Tell us a little bit more about Ideate. What should we be expecting in the near to long term future?
So we're looking at this. I used to say to some of you the old cliche, how do you eat an elephant? And it's one bite at a time, right? And so what our bite right now was to find the property, and then begin the movement towards that. And so, this summer, our goal will be, getting moved in, beginning getting an assessment of what's doable, in the spaces that we have there. And then we'll begin looking at, offering, in-person community dinners where we would reach out to, where we would identify folks who maybe don't know each other, and everything that we're doing are things that we picked up along the way, inspirational moments, whether it was from Kinfolk Magazine, Space on Ryder Farm at New York, you know, check these groups out. But having dinners where we could bring a collective together of about 20 people who don't know each other, and then step back and watch the magic happen, and do that. Also offering workshops, or maybe you're a presenter and maybe you're like Lexi and you do yoga and you're saying, hey, you have a beautiful property or you have a property that would really be conducive to this. What would that look like? And so I would say right now, as we move into that space, that what would be a huge help to us is hearing from folks who this message has resonated with, and then sharing your ideas, your dreams. How can we possibly partner? How can we support you in that? I've continued on in my work at School of the Arts, UNC School of the Arts. Keela is teaching kindergarten, and our plan is to stay in those tracks, at least for the immediate future, as Ideate, which is the name of the coaching practice that I founded, work from. And so if there's coaching practices that I can help with, if there's ideas for collaboration that you have, if you just want to add your name to a list, you're maybe in North Carolina or within a day's drive of Winston-Salem, and you would like to be included on this, I would say reach out to me via email, steve@weadvise.ws, steve@weadvise.ws. And just introduce yourself or let me know that you've heard this and let's begin the conversation. Yeah. So for right now, we just want to hear what's going on with other folks so that we can start ideating, if you will, opportunities for collaboration, partnership. Or maybe you're saying, hey, I want to commit to a coaching practice. I want to commit to having someone who holds me accountable, who invests me on a regular basis. I've been doing the emotional intelligence coaching now for just over formally over a year. Informally, we've been doing it for the past 20 years, but we'd love to learn more. Our website is weadvise.ws, and so that's going to be reflective of our work this past year, but we'll be updating that with this downtime now. My last encouraging thought would be moving forward is where do you want to be on the other side of this, right? So let's say that this thing lasts for 6 more months, all right? In 6 months, when you've gotten through, when you look back and you said, man, I had 6 months of summer weather, where do I hope to be on the other side of that? And I would say begin taking steps towards that now. And again, if there's anything that we can do to just live, really, for us, what I've learned is sometimes you just need someone to listen. And I love nothing more, believe it or not, after my rant on this conversation, I do enjoy just listening and helping folks connect the dots.
Mm. Well, I cannot wait to see what ID8 becomes and how many people's lives are changed. If it's anything like the experiences I've had with you on Welcome Squad and just between you and I, it's going to be life-changing for any individual who's lucky enough to feel the call and find themselves in your presence. So thank you for being an example for all of us. Thank you for talking with me today. I would love to do this again sometime very soon.
Absolutely. And thank you for the work that you're doing, for putting this together and for being a source of inspiration and being comfortable walking into spaces of unknown and kind of pushing to see where the furniture is in the room and yeah. Crafting new spaces. I'm excited to see what comes out of this. And we're excited for you and Lex.
Thanks so much, Steve. We love you dearly. And we'll come live on your farm very soon.
We look forward to it. Love you guys.
All right. See you, Steve. Okay, well, that was Steve Gallagher, an amazing human being, an amazing mentor, and that conversation certainly was needed on my part. This is a weird, uncomfortable, unfamiliar time we're in, and to feel like that's actually an opportunity is just a really, I think, helpful framework. I know I'm going to be doing a lot of thinking over the next few weeks and months about what it is that's calling my heart that I might not have been giving attention to, being so busy in the world. And I hope you can do the same. If you want to read the written responses to this conversation, you can find those at medium.com/@selftaught. And thank you so much for listening.